The following program comes to you as part of the Africa Health Network, a service of the Voice of America to our audience throughout the African continent.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Lina Ormudu, and welcome to Health Chat. The United Nations Population Fund, UNFPA, recently released a report on the International Conference on Population and Development, ICPD Beyond 2014 Global Report, is a comprehensive review of progress, gaps, challenges, and emerging issues in relation to the landmark ICPD Program of Action in 1994. The program emphasized the importance to regulating population through women's empowerment rather than population control. On the program today, we will discuss the report and look at the importance to ensure that women's health and well-being with initiatives such as the Millennium Development Goals, MDGs, are addressed. Our guest is Dr. Babatunde Oshotimen, Executive Director of UNFPA, the United Nations Population Fund. This program is pre-recorded and we will not accept any phone calls today. We will have our discussion on women's health and development with Dr. Babatunde in a moment, but first, I spoke to Dr. Koki Agarwal, Director of Maternal and Child Health Integrated Program with JPIGO, about how a significant number of women lose their babies at birth in Africa.
Now, Africa has the highest rate of neonatal death in the world. This is a bit disturbing. What do you make of it?
Well, I think that typically Africa has had poorer indicators than many other countries, but I feel there have been many changes in 2013 and the years before that, where African countries are making big strides now. So I feel like it's going to be a happier new year for women and children in Africa, because countries have made the decision to invest in maternal neonatal health programs to save the lives at the time that is needed.
So some of the specifics in terms of the good news in 2013, can you enlighten us?
Yes, for instance, many countries in Africa came together for a global newborn health conference in April of last year, where simple strategies that can save newborn lives were discussed and decided on how these countries can take these activities forward in their own ways. And many countries have since then taken simple practices like kangaroo mother care, holding a baby which is low birth weight, right to your chest right after birth, or making sure that the baby is dried and warmed right after birth and not left out in the cold to prevent hypothermia. All of these simple things that don't cost a lot of money but can save a newborn life are now being rolled out and practiced in these countries. So I'm really hopeful that countries that have seen the evidence from other countries and how it's working will be adopting them in their own country.
When we look at child's health and baby's health, we really cannot dissociate it from maternal health, right? The two are really very much close.
Oh, absolutely. We consider at the MCHIP program, and globally, we consider maternal and newborn health as a dyad and never to take them separately. So actually, WHO just released the postpartum postnatal guidelines that highlight what needs to be done both for the mother and for the newborn. And even in the conferences that we have had and the country programs that we run, we have seen that more and more countries are looking at it in a more integrated way. Mm-hmm. And they're doing things that are impacting the mother, including looking at the use of family planning. For instance, family planning has a strong impact on saving maternal lives as well as newborn lives. And recently there was a global international conference on family planning in Ethiopia, which brought together thousands of people from different countries in Africa and other Asian countries together to learn about why family planning matters for saving maternal and newborn lives.
And quickly, moving forward, what do you see as some of the priorities?
Well, I think that countries really need to make sure that they, once they learn of these new interventions, that they make sure that these interventions are rolled out at the country level and that they have systems in place. And they have to still look at the few women who will not make it into facilities to have programs supporting them at the community level. For instance, looking at giving them misoprostol, which is a tablet that prevents postpartum hemorrhage at the time of birth.
Okay.
So right after birth, if they can use that at the community level, if women don't make it into their facilities.
And that's very important. Dr. Agarwal, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And that was Dr. Koki Agarwal. She is the director of the USAID's Maternal Child Health Integrated Program.
Now our discussion with Dr. Babatunde Oshotimane of UNFPA. We would like to talk to you about a recent report that was released by the UN, the ICPD, Beyond 2014 Global Report. It's a comprehensive review of progress, gap, and challenges. Can you please give us a sense of the highlight of this report? First of all, why is it important to publish such a report at this time?
Thank you very much. This is a UN General Assembly requirement by the resolution which was passed in 2010 for UNFPA to lead the process of reviewing the program of action of the International Conference on Population and Development 20 years after Cairo, where it was it took place. Now, and I want to underscore the fact that UNFPA led the process. We had other entities in the United Nations as part of the review. So it is a UN-led process. And the process itself ensured that we had member states report on the progress they've made in 20 years. So we had a process of consulting all the member states, and they responded by giving us the progress they've made. They also responded by giving us what they expect going forward 20 years after. So this report is a report of member states' position on what they've done in 20 years and what they expect going forward. Now, so it gives us a clear view of how Cairo has performed in 20 years. It also gives us a clear view of what the expectations of member states are taking forth from 2014.
Okay.
But I think that what is actually also auspicious is that it also links us to the new thinking around what's going to happen when the MDGs finish in 2015 and where the world is going to go in terms of having a new development agenda. Believing that population and development is very essential for a new development agenda. So the output of this report, we expect will inform or should be part of the post-2015 development agenda.
So, Dr. Babatunde, when you look at the landscape right now, we are a year away from 2015. What can you tell us in terms of the way member states have been progressing toward the achievement of the MDGs?
Well, let me first of all step back and talk to what we got out of the report of the ICPD, because I think it's important to take that and then contextualize it in the last about 700 days to the end of the MDGs. What, in fact, the highlight of the report, which was just launched, shows that inequality was a common threat across all regions and continents and countries. And that is why we've not been able to accomplish and to do more with the Cairo agenda. And the inequalities reflect in terms of how women, girls, and young people have been able to benefit from the development agenda in each of the countries and the regions, much more so with adolescents and adolescent girls. And of course, it also speaks to the issue of rights and the rights of people to access information, access services, and how, you know, violation of rights of people have actually pushed back on some of the issues of development. So I think that was pretty obvious, and that also reflected on how, for an example, girls have not been able to go to school the way we expect them to go, how we've not been able to reach the MDGs related to maternal mortality, even though we need to celebrate the fact that maternal mortality has reduced by 50%. How we could have increased participation of women in politics, even though we know we have improved it since 20 years ago. So it's all interlinked, and I believe that going forward, I think each one of us, each one of the member states agree that progress that has made so far with regards to women's education, women's participation, reduction of maternal mortality and all that need to be accelerated, particularly in the last 700 days of the MDGs. And I think one of the areas which I believe we can make rapid progress is with universal access to reproductive health services, particularly family planning, where we know that if women have access to family planning, we can actually reduce maternal mortality by 30%. But that requires us to protect the rights of women to make choices. It also behoves us to ensure that they can access those services without coercion, and that we can also be sure that they will not be inhibited by it because they cannot afford it. So, you know, those are the prerequisites for making sure we can accelerate.
When we look at, this is such an important point, access to reproductive health services and family planning, there is a problem that we observe when it comes to conflict. It seems that women and girls in a situation of conflicts are perhaps forgotten. What about the sexual and reproductive health services for refugees? About 44 million people worldwide are currently displaced by conflict. According to the UN statistics, 32 million displaced by natural disasters. So how are we addressing this in a context of conflict?
Thank you very much. I mean, this is something which UNFPA is positioned to do. We always talk about the need to look after the dignity of women and girls, particularly in conflict. When the response to conflict is talked about in most circles, we always talk about provision of shelter, food, water, and all. But we see that many people don't talk about women's dignity, access to comprehensive reproductive health services, including family planning, and beyond that, protection against gender-based violence, because in conflict, that also goes up. And also provision of services for those who might be affected by the gender-based violence. So we at UNFPA, we are pre-positioned to doing that, and it's something we address in just about every conflict situation, not only in conflict situation, but also in the humanitarian situations that that do occur. I was, for an example, in Tacloban in the Philippines in December, just to make sure that we are at UNFPA working with the government of the Philippines to provide reproductive health services. And we know, just to underscore, that pregnancy does not know any war. And a pregnant woman would deliver when she would deliver. Mm-hmm. We also know that women's physiology does not know war, so we have to provide them all of what they require to ensure that they can keep their dignity as women.
Before we continue our discussion with Dr. Babatunde Oshotimein of UNFPA, the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, says Ethiopia has achieved one of the Millennium Development Goals of reducing child mortality by more than two-thirds. Take a listen.
Ethiopia reduced its under 5 mortality rate by 67% between 1990 and 2012, meeting the target for one of the Millennium Development Goals on child survival. The announcement came after UNICEF released its latest report on child survival Friday. Ethiopia's Minister of Health, Dr. Kassete Berhane Akmasu, welcomed the positive results, but admitted that despite the improvements, Ethiopia is still considered a high mortality country.
If you look at the absolute number of children dying in Ethiopia, it's still, you know, huge. You know, we have committed to end all preventable child and maternal diseases in a generation by 2035. And we have developed a roadmap to, you know, reach that ambitious target.
Diarrhea, pneumonia, and malaria are the leading causes of death among young children in Ethiopia. In 1990, the country's mortality rate for children under 5 was one of the highest in the world at 204 per 1,000 births. Ethiopia is one of four African countries, next to Tanzania, Liberia, and Malawi, to already have achieved the Millennium Development Goal. One of the reasons Ethiopia has done so well is because of its health extension program, through which 38,000 health workers were employed all over the country, providing healthcare services to a large part of the rural population. UNICEF representative to Ethiopia, Peter Salama, said that Ethiopia's approach can serve as an example for other countries.
Several other African countries have come to do study tours, including delegations from Togo, Guinea, Namibia, I believe. All came to really study the health extension program and to see how they could replicate this critical lesson of bringing health care to the doorstep of the rural population.
Progress on the Millennium Development Goal of reducing child mortality is slow in most countries, with only 13 out of 61 countries on track. The Millennium Development Goals were introduced in 2000 by the United Nations, focusing on issues such as fighting extreme poverty. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late tonight, we are discussing women's health and development with Dr. Babatunde Oshotimin. So when we look at this problem of violence against women and ensuring that women's dignity is preserved, how do we make men part of the solution, considering a lot of these cases, the violence is perpetrated by men?
We at UNFPA recognize that men as partners is an important part of providing solutions. It's not only actually in situations of conflict, even in situations of peace, because men usually stand as gatekeepers for some of the issues we are talking about. Women, you know, in some communities and some cultures, cannot even access reproductive health services without the consent of men in their lives. Okay. And so we work with men on the ground to enable them to understand that they must be part of the solution. And we've seen great progress in some of the communities where this has happened. I mean, we have, for an example, the husband school in Niger, which is now being replicated in many countries in Africa, where we talk to men on a regular basis about sexual reproductive health and the rights of women to make choices, and how it distinctly affects the quality of the lives of the women, and also saves lives. And we've seen great improvements in those communities where we have done that. Indeed, anecdotal evidence that I have also shows that where the husband school model has succeeded, it has also affected the survival of children, because, you know, as the women now go to health centers and access services, they also take their children along. So immunization is assured, they can look after the common childhood illnesses that tend to affect tends to affect infant and child mortality and morbidity.
So, Dr. Babatunde, have you seen in the report when you reviewed it, what did you see that may have seemed surprising, or maybe you were not expecting? I know you mentioned all these challenges with regards to inequality and everything, but did you find anything that you were surprised, that surprised you?
Well, maybe because I've been in the field for more than 30 years, I've seen how this has developed. But I want to say that the global community needs to celebrate the report, because it's shown us that if we actually allow women to make choices and you protect their rights, we can make great progress. But we also do acknowledge that the inequalities there are the things that are pulling us back from achieving the full potential of women. One of the things that I believe we need to actually point out, or two things maybe. One is that we have seen that in parts of the world there is a large youth population which maybe has not been so evident to us in our development work. But now as it is out there, and we have to you have to engage. This is the largest youth population the world has ever seen, almost 2 billion of them. And the next development agenda must be shaped around them, because they would own that space when, in point of fact, it's been implemented. So that's one which I believe we need to take. And that implies that government's investments in their education, in their skills development, entrepreneurship training, in their access to health, including comprehensive sexuality education and contraception, has to be complete in order for them to be able to have a future where they can contribute to the economies of their countries. And I believe that political participation will be part of that. So that's one. The second, of course, is that we, as we said before and underscored this time, is the aging of populations. And the fact that aging is now not restricted to just a particular region, but that is a worldwide phenomenon, particularly with regards to women who tend to survive longer than men, and the fact that the women we see now who are older are poorer for it, because the systems that they've grown up in actually has not provided for them adequately for their old age. So, in a sense, that's a lesson learned. And to go back to what I've just talked about with young people, as we now engage with young people and engage with the systems, we need to be more equitable, we need to be more inclusive, and ensure that everybody, old or young, is looked after within the system.
So if we understand, if we want to sum it up, although we cannot really do that, but looking at the way we talk about development and how it's important to address the needs of women, can we say that then ensuring the well-being of women and girls is the solution to development, to maybe sustainable development?
I think you captured my thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what we require to emphasize is the demography. Half of the world are women. Most of the developing world will be young people. Most of them will be adolescents and young girls. They are the ones who will determine the momentum going forward. So we need to engage adolescent girls, make them fit for purpose in terms of education, in terms of health, in terms of access to services, in terms of being able to make choices in their lives, in terms of access to economic opportunities and empowerment. Because if the 600 million adolescent girls in the world today have all that, they will transform the world. And if you actually take all of that as the centerpiece of the new development agenda, then you actually have change agents who would look after things like climate change, they would look after things like renewable energy. They would look after things like food security. They would look after things like governance and rule of law. And I think that, you know, we need to invest in them and transform and let them transform the world.
And before we let you go, Dr. Babatunde, I would like to have your thoughts on beyond 2014, especially with regards to the health MDGs. What can you tell us in terms of priorities, just if you were to give us some specific pointers?
I think that the health MDGs, especially the MDG 5, A and B, which actually relate to the work we do in UNFPA, are lagging behind. But let me also point out that and remind people that MDG 5B was not part of the MDGs when the MDGs started in 2001. So MDG 5B became operational, and that is the MDG that relates to universal access to sexual and reproductive health services,
yes,
especially family planning.
Yes.
So as we go forward, it is important that we understand that there is the unfinished business of the MDGs as it relates to family planning, as it relates to reduction of maternal mortality, as it relates to reduction of child mortality, and as it relates to HIV/AIDS, malaria. And all of them are cross-linked and interlinked. But I think also we cannot deal with them in isolation without looking at the issue of gender equality and the status of women in our societies. So going forward, we need to ensure that these unfinished business of the MDGs are reflected boldly in the next development agenda, and also underscore that if we do that and do it well, the issue of poverty alleviation and reduction would also be accelerated.
Okay. Dr. Babatunde, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
And that's all the time we have for this edition of Health Chat. We thank our guest, Dr. Babatunde Oshotimen, Executive Director of UNFPA, the United Nations Population Fund. For more on today's topic, log on to our website at voanews.com/healthchat. Also join us on facebook.com and let's keep the conversation going. Just look for Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenor Mudo in Washington, with producer Jackson Vunganyi. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 1730 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Dante, AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Music Time in Africa offers splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. From the classics of yesteryear to the hot tracks of the moment. I offer you what you need. Free ear therapy and mind massage. Join me. I'm Heather Maxwell for Music Time in Africa. Every Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 2000, and 2100 UTC.